Sunset Strip. Somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give to all the little girls and boys. So dig, Santa comes on big. He comes to call her when the snow's the most, and all you cats are sleeping warm as toast. And you gonna flip when old Saint Nick plays a lick on the peppermint stick. Comes a flying from a higher place, fills the stockings by the fireplace. So you have a yule that's cool. Yeah, let the kings blow.
You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 380.
Hello and welcome to the Outdoor Station once again on this, the third of the Wild Camp series, where I head out once a month to do a wild camp, keeping it as simple as possible, really, either bivvying or simple shelter, taking in the month and the weather as it happens. Now, it's December 2014 as I record this, and faithful listeners will remember that a similar time of year, 3 years ago, December 2011, would you believe, that I was joined by Andy Howell. The famous blogger, Mr. Andy Howell, joined me for another Bob and Andy's Big Day Out. And that was where I attempted to cook a three-course meal, again in Wales, and as it happened, in rain and a storm. And it was a successful event, but it is in the archives, so do look it up. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. So, once again, I've invited Andy to come away from his lovely, warm, centrally heated accommodation and try another wild camp with me. And this time we're going to try and cook, would you believe, the same type of thing, a three-course meal, different menu this time, inspired by MasterChef, over a wood stove. However, once again, it is raining and we are in Wales. But Andy is with me and looking forward sensationally to this. And of course, the reason it has taken 3 years since 2011 is that I have been waiting, as a lot of people know, for Andy to return the favour. But strangely, it hasn't happened. But I'd said I'd never mention that.
Bah, humbug. 3 years ago, dear, you took me out into the middle of nowhere and we sat in the car and we looked outside at the rain hurtling down, and took us quite a while to drag ourselves out. And here we are, 3 years later, sitting in the car, looking outside, the rain coming hurtling down. And, you know, well, I suppose the only difference this time is we seem to have parked a car park, and right in front of us is a huge life-size dinosaur. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, yes, we're parked at Danagolf Caves, I think is the Danagolf Caves is the way to pronounce it, where we're propping the car, leaving the car for a couple of days, and we're heading off over onto the Black Mountain to find a suitable spot for this adventure to begin. We appear to be the only people here apart from a couple of coach loads of children.
I wonder why that is.
Yes, yeah, and don't they look enthusiastically happy as well?
The children look immensely happy. You know, this is our school trip just before Christmas. Yeah. Colids, it's nice and cold and very, very wet.
Yeah, look at all those colourful...
Yeah, being dragged around by a tractor. God, they look excited, don't they?
Soaking wet, cold and miserable.
Do you think, I mean, one of the things about these outward-bound centres is that, you know, you get... give these young people this experience and it lives them the rest of their lives. But looking at this bunch, I somehow don't think in 20 years' time they're going to be doing wild camps.
You reckon? They're not taking to it, are they?
No.
Anyway, let's go and get ourselves sorted. We'll pay for the parking and get ourselves onto the hill. And hopefully we'll pick this up as the adventure unfolds. But this is another Bob and Andy's Big Day Out. Whoa. Christmas meal 2014.
Doesn't get better than this.
Oh, I think it does. Considerably. Well, as usual,
Time is of the essence. It's now 10 to 4. The cloud is really, really low, which is exaggerating the daylight being reduced. We've got a visibility of probably almost 100 metres if we're lucky. Temperature's dropped. Weather forecast was the wind was going to be about 20 miles an hour, which it certainly feels that way. And for anybody that's been there, this has certainly reminded us of the Mauna Lea. Exactly the same, undulating, very, very hard to navigate. We've sort of taken a bit of a direct route, sort of leaving the path, and you've really got to watch what you're doing. But we're aiming for an area which we think is fairly flat and conducive to camping, which is about a kilometre and a half to go. So hopefully we should be there in about another 15, 20 minutes and pick it up. But are we having fun yet, Andy?
We're having fun, Bob. There's like nothing better than these, you know, upland Welsh landscapes where you can see bugger all, really.
And the rain, don't forget the rain.
Yeah, yeah. So when nightfall hits us, if we get thoroughly lost, we won't be totally disorientated.
Well, nightfall will be about 10 minutes at this
anyway,
rate.
Anyway, put that damn thing away.
Okay. Well, a quick update. It's 20 past five now, and nightfall and cloud has stopped play, basically. It got very, very hard to orientate ourselves, and as much as we were looking for the path that we mentioned perhaps earlier on, we kept crossing it according to all the GPS and maps. So in the end, we've decided to pull up next to a stream, as you can hear. Not our chosen destination, but I think it's not a bad spot. But when you're trying to do everything in the rain and mist and at night time, anything's a good spot. So it's a change of plan at the moment. I'm just trying to reassess the situation and get both shelters erected. One minor thing that I've discovered is that I brought my usual video still camera with me, and I forgot to put a chip in it, so the pictures will be taken with the phone, if any at all. But I've got my WikiUp 3 up at the moment, and I'm just trying to go through the gear to try and sort this out. As you can hear, it's a fairly blustery sort of wind, so I'm not too sure if I'm actually going to go through with the whole cooking experience, or perhaps just do a bit of it and do some of it tomorrow morning for breakfast, perhaps, if circumstances change. But at least you can see what you're doing, obviously, in daylight, and obviously cooking inside a tent, particularly a wood stove. I wanted to make sure I had the most ventilation, but at the same time I don't want it to be too blustery and obviously dangerous, so I'll make the assessment in a minute and see what happens. But so sadly things haven't gone to plan, so as you have to do, you have to adapt and overcome. A bit more later. Now, if anybody's read our Facebook page, they would have seen that I've posted what the menu was tonight. And I've just I ran a copy off, and even that paper's all soggy and ripped. So I'm going to read it to you before it gets destroyed completely, because I'm about to start cooking. I'm going to risk it. I've decided to do it on gas, though, rather than a wood stove, which is a shame, because I carried a lot of fuel with me. But I don't feel particularly safe in doing it like it is. So gas with a bit of ventilation should be okay. So aperitif, we have warm spiced mulled wine with a hint of fruit zest and hors d'oeuvres. Entree is a winter aromat roasted soup of tomato served with herbs and black olive croutons. Plat du jour is a Bordelais chevreuil cooked in fond de brunde, complemented with paysan of organic vegetables and Réalfort pommes de terre. Dessert is a moist Genoise au chocolat with the luscious heart of molten chocolate noir. And for digestif, homemade slow gin liqueur, coffee with mousse au chocolat blanc. Now that's what it says when it's being read out on MasterChef. In reality, it's slightly different. So what I'm first going to do is try and cook the main course, which is basically a venison stew with a certain type of recipe. So I've got the oil in the pan now, and I'm using a 1300 non-stick. I'm about to fire it up and start with the leeks, followed by the venison, which has been marinating, if you like, in a plastic bag with flour, with lots of herbs and various things in it. So here goes. This is going to be tricky to do as I'm talking as well. So I've got to keep obviously one eye on everything. But in go the leeks. And the thing about titanium, or cooking in a titanium pan, is you've got to keep stirring. That's the big, what you've got to keep doing, because the heat doesn't spread as well as other pans. So I just cook those until those are translucent, and then we add the meat, which hopefully will be separated slightly from the flour, which we'll add later to thicken the sauce up. But the idea of this is to cook it slowly and for a long period of time, which is the reason I wanted to do this on a wood stove, because a wood stove I could slowly feed the fuel and have it cooking for an hour or so. Andy's actually bought a couple of stoves as well, but they are of the cook very quickly variety. So we'll call on those if we get sort of stuck in an emergency, but I'm going to try and cook this on a lower heat as I can for as long as possible, until the gas runs out perhaps, and see how we get on. That's a lovely smell. Right, let's find the meat. Which sadly, it's congealed all together in one lump from being in the bag. So this is going to be interesting. Right, let's get this in here before it starts to burn. That's not supposed to happen. It's all one soggy, floury lump, which is not what we want. We want this broken up. So I'm trying to do that with a plastic spork. Off. That was the red wine being added. So hopefully it'll start to cook simmering speed soon. So that's the red wine, the stock, the citrus peel, and what else? All the herbs are in there, and the stock cube. So now this is where you'd actually sit it down to simmer. It's only just gone 6 o'clock, so I'm going to put this on a really low gas and try and run it for I don't know, half an hour or so, and then pop it in a pot cozy before I start the next stage, I think. But it smells and tastes fantastic. Yeah, that's the part. That's the difficult part done. The rest of it should be fairly straightforward, providing I've got enough fuel left. Anyway, Andy's still faffing about with his tent, trying to create perfection. So perhaps tomorrow morning we'll have a good look at that and have a chat about his tent. This is one of Colin Ibbotson's new designs, so we're very interested to see that in the daylight. Right, back a bit later on. Well, Andy's finally joined me after faffing about, trying to get his life in order.
Well, it's probably not the best time to pitch a tent for the very first time.
No.
The wind, in the pitch darkness, in the driving rain.
But, yeah.
You know, we live and learn, and we like to take things a bit dangerously, don't we?
Well, apparently so, yes. What do you think? Do you think it smells good?
It smells good. It smells as good as I hoped it did as we were traipsing across that moor, trying to work out where the hell we were.
Yes.
Anyway.
Anyway, so I'm carry on cooking while we're doing this, but I thought just to make it specially like Christmas, we'd do a Secret Santa. And of course,
oh yes,
here's my Secret Santa, which has been beautifully prepared and wrapped and kept in a plastic bag, knowing what the weather was like. So there you go, Andy.
Thank you.
That's one from me.
And here's your Secret Santa, Bob. Beautifully wrapped up, but wasn't kept in a plastic bag, so it's a little bit, well, how do we describe that as?
I would say soggy. That was a wet cardboard box.
Well, so anyway,
Thank you, Santa. That's a big secret.
Would you like to open yours first?
Oh, right, okay.
Now, before you open it, there's a story listening.
Okay,
here we go. See, I thought, what do you buy the man who has absolutely everything? That's in terms of the outdoors, of course. And it is very difficult, because if Bob doesn't sell something, he's probably got an old sample somewhere that some rep left. So, you know, there's very little that you can buy Bob that relates to the outdoors. So then I thought, no, we need to change our tack here. Now, Bob is, as regular listeners will know, a man who takes personal grooming seriously, and especially out on the trail. You know, there's none of this kind of rough stuff with Bob. He likes to look his best at every occasion.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong at all. So I thought, well, there has to be something along the personal grooming thing.
There we go.
So I went into Boots, and I found myself looking at all of these fantastic fragrances, you know, David Beckham, stuff like that. So I said to the woman at the counter, I said, have you got anything really cheap and nasty? And she looked at me, very confused and frightened for a minute. And she said, yes, right to the back of the shop over there in that corner. So I stumbled over there, and I just found the perfect thing.
Right, so
I think you better open it now.
So you've built it up now. So
yes.
So it's cheap and nasty and personal hygiene, and it comes in a very... In fact, where's my camera? I'm going to take a picture of this. This very soggy box on the phone, right.
Look, it's just a thought that counts.
Yeah, what
the
thought?
The listeners know that.
What thought? Here we are, on my knees. Here we go. Right, well, I'll keep the camera out, because I'm sure this is going to be a terrific surprise. Look at the beautiful wrapping. Sellotape all over the place.
It was very beautiful last night.
Oh. A L'Oreal Men Expert, the action hero. Thermic resistant, 48-hour antiperspirant, and quenching gel.
Now, I have to say, there's nothing suggestive in the 24-hour antiperspirant. Yeah, yeah. And I have no idea what the gel is. But when I saw Action Man there, I just thought, that has to be for
Bob. Don't you use gel and grooming materials then?
No, not really.
No. When nothing comes as a complete surprise. Well, thank you, Santa.
Which is why people tend to camp quite a long way from me when I'm at campsite. Anyway, I thought Action Hero, that has to be the thing. So
cheap and nasty Action Hero. Well, I'll hang on. Oh, well, you can take it out of the plastic bag, because it's obviously beautifully wrapped. Well,
it's a plastic bag, and it's dry.
And it's dry.
It is dry. Would you like to take a photograph of that?
Yeah, I've got a photograph. Just hold it on your lap, then. People will see you actually with intent. Yes, it's in a secret Santa. Now, hang on, James. Don't rush. There's a story attached to yours as well.
No, never.
Yes, there is. I'm just going to stir my stew. Interestingly, I was also in the big city and went into one of the well-known, less expensive places.
Well, that would be Tewkesbury, wouldn't it?
No, the big city of Malvern. Oh. Like you, I went up to somebody and said, what have you got on clearance that's cheap and nasty? And thankfully...
We know each other so well.
they had a selection. And so I was torn for a moment. The selection was too big, really, because I couldn't narrow it down. It wasn't necessarily decided by price, because they were all the same price, so that really fooled me. But then I remembered speaking to Kate at one time when she was looking for something special for you, and she was saying that, actually, you're quite a demanding person when it comes to camping. And she finds... You know, finds being sort of at your beck and call quite tiresome sometimes. And really, she never knows when you want something now or when you want something in a couple of minutes' time. So it really then was the decider. As soon as I realised what she was explaining, right. Then I thought, yes, this is the item. So open it by all means.
Good. Right, here we go.
See the excitement mounting.
Service, please. Excellent. Look at. Now, I just have to explain what this is, because it's going to take a while to get out. This is one of those little things you used to see in shops, and somebody comes up and they go, service, please.
There you go. So, I thought next time you and Kate go camping, just pull that a bit closer. Yeah. Next time you and Kate are together doing this, then I'm sure she would love to have a little way of knowing that. Well, time for tea, and
I think it might get used this evening. Come on, chef.
Oh dear. So we are. Yes, Merry Christmas. That's nice.
Now,
that
look, don't you think it's impressive? Because what's the name of that bloke on MasterChef, the big guy, Greg? Greg,
yeah,
guy who dives into all the desserts.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't got one of these, has he?
No.
I imagine he'd like one of those, because he could say 30 seconds on the plates. that would be it.
Yeah.
I think that's a fabulous gift, that, actually.
Well,
I've just got to work out where to put it in the pack.
Yes, yes, but that's, I'm sure you'll know where it is as it moves around the pack. Right, I think this has had about 45 minutes now. I think it's pop cosy time. Where's my pop cosy gone? Right, well, the veg is now on, so we get that into a pot cosy, and then before we then, once we've got the veg pot cosied and the meat's now pot cosied, I'll go and start the first thing, which will be the mulled wine, which is about time, because I'm gagging for a drink. But in the meantime, the excitement of Secret Santa has died down. Do you fancy catching up with the last 12 months, see what's happening and what's coming or whatever?
Well, I don't know what's happened to you, but it's been a funny year for me, really, because... I walked the TGO Challenge and then didn't have a great deal else planned, and I had two trips to Scotland which I've had to abort for two different reasons. So I've done quite a lot of walking, day walking, but I haven't done much camping. And you kind of, when you look back at the year, you think, actually, I've missed that. That's been kind of an important part of the year. So it's just a slightly strange year this year. Being busy and you know.
Well, I know the feeling. I've certainly had a busy year, what with doing our show at the beginning of the year and various other things that we've undertaken. And that's one of the reasons I started this Wild Camp Challenge, really, is to actually get out once a month and go and do things in a variety of environments.
Talking about the show, because the show was a big success, really, wasn't it?
I certainly felt that way, and everybody seemed very pleased, yeah.
You're going to do it again next year?
I've got the date penciled in on the 25th of April at the moment for next year, which is just before the TGO.
Yeah, I think that has potential. Nicely timed, really, as well.
Well, and it works quite well, for fits around all the other shows and things. But we're looking to have a large marquee this time on the car park. All the brands have all been very, very keen, actually. They approached me saying, are you doing it again? So they're very keen, and as I probably said last time, the one comment that they all seemed to mention was the fact that just how well-informed all the visitors were, what well-informed customers they've got. So I thought that was quite interesting, actually. So everybody's welcome. Once again, all the details will be released over time, but 25th of April is the date.
I should say it's a lovely spot, really. Beautiful part of the world, Malvern in Worcestershire. Nice pub just down the road, wonderful campsite just up as well. And I think probably that campsite side of it will grow, I guess.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, well, certainly everybody's said very positive things, so fingers crossed anyway. So at the moment, that's the plan.
So, I bought my only real major gear by this year from there, which was not a backpacking tent, which was the big wigwam tent,
which
we bought for music festivals and things like that, which is a really excellent piece of kit for car camping or festivals or something like that.
Well, it's like this mini wiki up tent. You know, the teepee tents have got a certain amount of character to them, haven't they? I bet you had a few comments as well, actually.
Yeah, it stood out a little bit from all these strange little tunnel tents that people struggle to put up. And there we go, just the one pole, straight up, bang. Yeah.
Bottle of wine open, ready to go.
Yeah, so it was, that was quite good. But I don't think I'd have bought that unless I'd have seen it, actually, standing up in the, I might have done it. Yeah. But I think the one opportunity to see all the stuff and the shelters and tents and talk to the reps and have a look at the bits and pieces. I mean, we do miss that because... You know, even when the outdoor show was at the NEC, even the last few years, it got more and more
experience orientated, didn't it, with climbing walls and stuff like that. And I think now it's moved to London, it's very much lost that sense of community. So it was nice to have that back. So I think you did a good job there.
Excellent. Well, obviously I went to Friedrichshafen, saw the did the film of some of the things I saw at Friedrichshafen. I think one of the big things next year will be the Sita Summit sleeping mat. Everybody's fallen in love with their Neo Airs, but like all single air pocket sleeping units, once it has a puncture, you're down on the ground, you know. And the Sita Summit has got a lot of positives.
This is the mat that has two chambers in it.
Two air chambers, yeah, one on the top, one on the bottom. But it also, because of the way it's designed, having laid on it, it's very comfortable. Very comfortable. Yeah. You don't have that falling off the edge feeling. It's not sort of pushing you one way or the other. So, I think that was going to be the biggest big hit next year. What else? I think probably there's more people interested in wild camping, experiencing those type of things. So I think there's going to be a lot more bushcraft type, wild camping type activities going on. And Michael, the guy from Lux, I've been working with him on improvements to the unbelievably popular Hex Peak tent this year. And next year he's coming out with two versions, one slightly bigger and one a lot bigger, which is very similar in features to the Wiki Up, actually. I didn't realise, I only saw the drawings the other day. I think that's going to be extremely popular.
Well, I think the thing about his tents is they're very good value for money, and they're very well made. The big wigwam tent we had, the quality of construction on that was really very, very good, so you couldn't fault that.
Well, we try and keep without trying to sound like an advert, we try and keep the cost, the value for money element as keenly as possible, because one comment that's been mentioned actually by one of our listeners, Bob Andrews and a few other people, is just how expensive a lot of outdoor equipment has become. Is this the way to go? £500 jackets, £600 tents, little backpacking tents. Is it really, you know?
I think you've really got to think very seriously about that. I mean, the scale of the price rising has been quite shocking. Now, in some areas, there are reasons for it, aren't there? The new regulations around down, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose, you know, if you're thinking about having a range of kit that you know you're going to use more than once or twice, a good down jacket is always going to be worth the investment. You know, it's a lot of money, but it's a once in a lifetime investment. But I've been talking recently to two people who are looking to do the TGO Challenge for the first time, and it will be the first time they've done any serious backpacking. And I mean, a major consideration for them is actually trying to work out where they should spend money on gear and where they should compromise, or whether they should try and I've got a tent that's like perfectly serviceable, maybe a little bit on the heavy side, but you know, do I take that and spend the money on a really good sleeping bag or a down jacket? And I think it's quite clear that neither of these two guys seem to be doing it particularly on a budget, but money's more of an option than I think somebody starting out doing this 8 or 9 years ago would have found.
Yeah, I think they're obviously... People have invested their designs in more exotic materials, like Cuban fibre. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. But it's not a cheap material. It's not a cheap material to work with, and the skills required. So consequently, things go increase in price. As you say, the issue about down, that's really put down products through the roof, good quality down products. I can see there's a lot of things going on the internet, really, where people have this dilemma between do they value the design or do they value the product?
Yeah, I think the two guys I've been talking to, I think at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, I've said to them, look, you really, first of all, you need to be warm at night. I mean, that's the most important thing. Scotland can be cold. I mean, you can be lucky with the weather, but it can be cold, and there's nothing worse than, trying to walk, 15, 18 miles when you've not slept the night before and you've been cold. So I think prioritising keep yourself warm is quite important. It's still reasonably easy to get reasonably priced cookware, I think, if you shop around and do that. But The big ticket items are becoming bigger tickets.
Well, that's true. That's true. Right, it's time for the mulled wine, so I need the pan that the microphone's sitting in.
Okay.
So hang on a second. Right.
We'll see you back in a few minutes.
Well, I can describe the smell here as decidedly Christmassy. This is mulled wine, and Bob, of course, being Bob and not cutting corners, in the mulled wine, in the titanium pot on the gas stove, are real spices, sticks of cinnamon and cloves and stuff like that.
Yeah, and citrus, a bit of orange peel as well.
Yeah, so the real thing, really.
Absolutely.
No cutting corners, no. Only the best for us.
Absolutely. Preparation and planning, Andy.
So I think the first stage of the MasterChef menu would go down well. I mean, to be fair, this is better than MasterChef because they don't do these little... they don't have alcohol, do they? They don't do glasses of wine or hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that.
Well, not in public, they don't, certainly. So when this is ready, which I've got my little tea sieve here, tea strainer, we will be having warm spiced mulled wine with a hint of fruit zest and hors d'oeuvres. Now, the hors d'oeuvres sounds posh, doesn't it, when MasterChefs say it? But in reality...
What have we got?
It's a roasted...
Roasted and salted mixed nuts.
So would you like to...
Would you like me to do the honours, dear?
Dish out the nuts.
Oh, go on, have a nice handful of nuts there,
have
Bob.
Have a nibble of nuts.
Yes, a little nibble of nuts.
Oh, hang on, that's enough. Thank you.
Oh.
So I'm going to dispel as we go through all this. All these posh descriptions that they give. First two are fairly straightforward, but the third one should be interesting. If it all works. Which I'm surprised, actually, considering the state we were in when we arrived. It's slowly coming together.
Well, we were a bit later getting away than we wanted to. And we started climbing towards the high ground on the Black Mountains. And they're rather claiming, as we said. Visibility was very poor. So we didn't quite get to where we thought we might get to, but we found a little spot near a stream. I mean, interesting to see where we are in the morning. But yeah.
So what advice would you give to somebody who wants to go wild camping for the first time then? Because you're well experienced in this, and this is what this series is all about.
Well, I don't think you want to be too ambitious the first time you do it. And I think probably, I don't know about you, but it's very different picking a site when you're wild camping and putting the tent up than it is when you're on a flat campsite. So I think I'd probably say something not too dissimilar to what we've done today. You know, maybe an hour, a couple of hours walk, find a nice spot and make an evening of it. You know, have some food. If you want to take something to drink with you, do that. And because the beauty of wild camping, not that you can, not this time of the year, of course, but the beauty of wild camping is really looking at the landscape, isn't it? Having a look around, having the tent flap open, lying there, looking at the scenery, the wild, the landscape,
wildlife, and as you say, stars, and
I think that for me is the thing too. Is to, if you're doing it the first time, just make sure you've got the time to A, set up camp properly, and B, enjoy it. And then, as you begin to understand how long it takes to get your gear sorted out, then you can obviously tack that onto the back of longer days. And one of the things that I think does take a while to sort out is getting your own tent system working, isn't it? I mean, I tend now to have a system that I try and use whichever shelter I am, about, you know, how I pack things and where I put things and where I leave them, so that cooking implements and food and stuff and fuel are all in the same place. But it takes you a while to get used to do that. So the first few times you do it, there's a lot of scrambling around in the tent. There's a lot of looking for things in the pack, and you know. And as you get more experienced, you get obviously that gets slicker. So I think the first thing you've really got to do is to make sure you give yourself enough time to find a good site, settle down, enjoy yourself.
I think that's good advice. Rather than trying to do everything in a rush and assume. That's, I think the last thing you do is assume. I mean, a good example today for us is, you know, we assumed we would get to the point that I was looking for on the map. And we had to make an alteration based on circumstances. And that happens a lot when you're doing wild camping per se.
I think when you're walking and wild camping as well, particularly thinking of people who are looking to do some hiking and wild camping or maybe a TGO challenge or something, The other thing to do is to make sure you don't walk too late in the day. You know, on this year's TGO Challenge, I had Kate with me. And she hadn't done much walking for the last couple of years because she's been doing NMA. So I had instructions to choose a reasonably straightforward route. And I think on the first 3 days, we camped short of our target. And we did so, really, because we found nice camp spots. And, you know, towards the end of the afternoon, and there was a bit of sun. And it just seemed a good idea to make the most of that. And a couple of times we sat out for an hour or so in the last of the sunshine, dangling our feet into little streams. And then the weather tended to close in, as it does. But, you know, we could have pushed on another hour or something. And it's amazing the number of times you do that. And you get the next day, you get to the point where you thought you might find a campsite, and actually it didn't look very nice. So, you know, that's, I think, one of the things is just don't overdo it. Don't kill yourself. You know, you can always make up lost ground on a long day at some point if you're heading to a campsite or something like that. So I think if you're really seriously wanting to explore wild camping, I think you have to decide quite early on. The camping is as much of as an experience as the walking, isn't it?
And so absolutely, yeah.
You need to give yourself time and space to do it with comfort.
Anyway, cheers.
Yes. There you go, lovely. Yeah. Two titanium mugs.
A sound of ecstasy. And some roasted mulled wine.
I'll tell you what, Christmas has started.
It's officially Christmas.
Yeah, it's officially Christmas.
Yeah. Now, I think it's one thing I would say as a criticism of some of the routes I've taken in the past. I've put some very long days in, and actually you get to a point where exhaustion carries on into the next day, and it can spoil it. It can spoil the pleasure.
I think as you get a bit older, I mean, let's touch that delicate subject because we've been talking about it a lot today. I think you do need to think about that. And one of the things that I was quite interested in last year on the TGO Challenge was, you know, at the end of the day, because we were doing a reasonably straightforward route, I wasn't exhausted, which was quite unusual. Now, it wasn't as exciting a route as I'd want, but I think this year, certainly in my planning, I've thought more about where I'm going to throw in the long days and where I might do that. And, it's worth thinking about. I remember one of the best bits of advice I was ever given on my first TGO Challenge was by one of the vetters, Bernie Marshall, who I met several times on my first week, who said to me, "Remember, lads, there were a couple of us, you know, you're on your holidays. You know, you're not trying to kill yourself. You're not on a route march."
Anyway, I think while we're supping our warm wine, it's about time I got the roasted tomato soup going.
That sounds very special. Have you roasted those tomatoes personally?
Personally roasted between my hot thighs.
I think that's probably too much information, but there you go.
Right, I'm going to stop the recorder and we'll come back in a second. Right, I think we're on to second course. Soup is bubbling away nicely. Just to remind you and listeners what you're having. You're having winter aromat roasted soup of tomato served with herb and black olive croutons.
Well, once again, smells lovely.
Right, this trick is going to be
One of the things about the old wild camping thing is basically any food tastes much better, doesn't it?
True indeed, right.
That old adage about out in the open air. Now, I should say that Bobby's pouring the soup into these rather little nippy little collapsible plastic mug things.
Packaging these days.
Various different colours.
And there's your croutons.
And here comes the croutons. Oh, blimey. Thinks of everything.
You're doing the washing up, remember?
Oh, I think we might leave it to the morning.
Oh!
Well, that would have the advantage we'd know where the hell we were then. Well, we hope.
Right, there you go. There's your soup. Anyway.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Enjoy. My croutons. Oh, you can't have too many croutons. So what about wild camping in Europe then? I mean, you've done, I'd say Europe, we are in Europe, but you know, in France and that sort of thing. Is it easy? Do you feel?
I think you need to pick the spot to do it.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I like the Pyrenees and going about it so much is that in the Pyrenees National Park, while camping is encouraged.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and it's maybe a bit easier than on the Alps when you've got the big trails. And it's a bit easier to get out of the way. I suppose the difference there is that, because the further south you go, you don't get twilight. And in August, even September, it gets dark quite quickly. So, again, it's one of these things where, you know, when you think of it as a foreign holiday and you tend to think about getting up a bit late and lousing around, it's one of these things that it's really worth getting an early start, getting the distance in.
Right.
And again, then finding the right colour wild camp. But in areas like the Pyrenees or the Massif Central in France or, you know, bits of Spain, you can have some stunning wild camping.
And so, the creation has been done, if you can call it that. The proof of the pudding, as they say, is in the eating. Let's just take a picture for posterity. This is what Andy has to live up to every year. This is now.
Well, I was just saying to Bob, you know, you've raised the bar this year. This isn't dehydrated food. This is a casserole that's been probably cooked and finished here. But you better tell us what it is.
What it is, right, okay. So a plat de jour is a Bordelais chevreul, cooked in a fond brun, complemented with a paysanne of organic vegetables and a Ralfort pomme de terre, which in English is... Bordelais is a type of recipe for the stew. Chevreul is venison, so it's venison stew, cooked in a brown sauce, complemented by a paysanne of organic vegetables, which is basically organic vegetables chopped in triangles. They're not very big triangles, but some of them are triangular. And the rail for pomme de terre is horseradish mash.
There you go.
So, there you go, sir.
There we go.
The
that
proof of the pudding...
Splendid, splendid.
...is in the eating, as they say.
Yes. Try this horseradish mash.
As the weather picks up once again.
That's rather nice. It's got a nice kick to it.
Afraid I forgot the salt and pepper and all the various other little condiments and the tablecloth, but I wouldn't want you to go back to Kate and complain.
She'd just be happy with the mash. Very nice, Bob.
Well, you can't really say anything else, can you, to be honest, but...
No, but I think, you know, given the amount of time and preparation and the equipment you have to use, you've done a good job.
So that's all on one stove.
Yeah, impressive. We did have dreams of wood-burning fires and a kind of production line of wood burners, but as you can probably hear, the wind is up and it's not raining heavily now, but it was early.
Yeah, it's not conducive, is it? Which is a great shame, really, especially as I've carried wood burner pots and pans and all the fuel for it, just in case.
By which Bob means he's carried the wood. Saying it's impressive, because we're in a place that doesn't have wood.
Yeah, definitely. You're all right for water. Right, well, we're going to sit back and enjoy this. And if you're listening to this at Christmas time, wishing you a very happy Christmas.
Yes, I think it's all the best to everybody. And this is a time when you should be planning your trips and your excursions for next year. Getting those ambitions and their dreams going, I think. Getting the maps out. It's what the long, dark winter nights are for.
But we'll probably come back a bit later as we find different subjects we think we might need to chat about, you might be interested in. So we're just going to sit back and enjoy this. And we've got dessert and digestif yet. And by the time we get to the slow gin, I'm sure we're going to be talking complete and utter...
Even more so than normal.
Yes.
So that concludes part one of the Wild Camp number 3 Christmas special, another Bob and Andy's big day out. Please visit the Outdoor Station website for more information and photographs from the trip. part two will be along shortly, where we move on to the next course and continue our conversations on wild camping, social media, and the madness of cooking meals on stormy nights like this. So join us then as our mini adventure continues. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorstation.co.uk.